You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're going to talk Football World Cup with an Australian in exile in the UK, John Davidson, mate. How through the roof were you, and how sober are you right now?
Pretty shocked and amazed still. Going through to the round of 16 for the first time since 2006. It's pretty amazing stuff for Australian football.
Yeah, massive. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think any Australian, even the most ardent Australian football fan, except maybe Robbie Slater with his love and with Graham Arnold, expected this, right? Because everybody was like, Arnie's not the great coach that we need. He's probably out of his depth. It's probably the most average Socceroos squad we've sent to a World Cup for a long time. I mean, it doesn't really have any stars, a lot of journeyman players. This wasn't supposed to happen. This wasn't on the script.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think we rode our luck to qualify on penalties against Peru, and then the draw with France, Denmark, and Tunisia, we were hoping not, I guess, to be embarrassed, really. So they've massively overachieved, and two wins out of three games is a fantastic result that a few people would have picked.
Given that how many of these Australian players play in Scotland, what does that say about the SPL?
Yeah, I think the Scotteroos is a fair shout. I mean, Harry Souter has been immense. Obviously, Martin Boyle's injured, but he's there with the squad and sort of playing a bit of team morale role. But yeah, a number of A-League players have gone over to Scottish football and doing well. And there's a massive Scottish influence on this team, so as long as with an A-League influence, so I think that bodes well for the A-League, considering how well some of those players have been doing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you could argue that Australia, outside of Harry Souter, Australia's most impressive player has been Craig Goodwin, who's still running around for Adelaide. It really has put their focus, I think, on the A-League. Seven, I think it is, players out of the Aussie 26 play in the A-League, including Leckie, who scored today, of course, and I've already mentioned Craig Goodwin, who scored the goal against France. What do you think that does for the A-League as a league, and maybe as somewhere that clubs in Europe can go shopping?
Yeah, I think it's massive for the A-League, just massive for Australian football in general. I mean, you've seen the scenes of people celebrating in Melbourne and just the general reaction. I think it puts the A-League more on the map. It gives a lot more media coverage to football, which has probably been, in terms of media coverage, was on the wane for a couple of years. And it's just great publicity, as well as, a great lead-up before the Women's World Cup, which will obviously be in Australia and New Zealand next year. So it's just, it's hard to underplay how big it is getting through the round of 16. And obviously Argentina and a little bloke called Lionel Messi next.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't help but think, the last time you got to the round of 16 was 2006, and I think you got beaten then by eventual champions Italy. It wasn't a controversial penalty at all, that. And we didn't see a controversial penalty in Argentina's game this morning, so no parallels.
No. I think the 2000 game probably rankles still that Australia didn't go more for the throat with a man advantage after Matarazzi got sent off. But it's a huge challenge. Obviously, you can't underestimate how big that game is. But just to get through the group, I think is a fantastic achievement. You've got to give credit to Graham Arnold. He's been maligned by a lot of people. And, doesn't have a job once the World Cup's finished, but, he's looking decent for a new contract with the Socceroos, the way he's going at the moment.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, I think there's a lot of people in Australian football who were hoping that they'd see the back of him. I think a lot of that's down to the type of football he plays, right? The way, and being quite pragmatic.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes some of the comments he's made as well probably haven't gone down as well. I think there was one earlier in the tournament about Aussie DNA, and you can kind of throw that cliche at at any country. But you know, the way he's motivated this team and the way they've bounced back from the France game, which was a, you know, apart from a bright opening 15, 20 minutes, it was domination by the French. I mean, it is quite a remarkable turnaround. So you've got to give him credit. He's done a fantastic job, and you know, equaled Chris Hiddink, who was the assistant to back in 2006.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the two teams that you have beaten, Tunisia and Denmark, 2-1-0 wins. I thought the Danes would definitely be better than the Aussies. They were disappointing. Tunisia, I thought, was probably going to be a bit more of an even game. But there were times in the first half against you guys that when Tunisia turned it on, they looked almost unstoppable going forward, particularly through that left-back, sort of left centre-back, that channel. They seemed to attack well through there. To be honest, I'm really surprised that you've got to the end of both those games without conceding.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, you look at Denmark and Tunisia, both nations, they're ranked higher. They've, you know, on paper, got better squads, you know, more high-quality players playing at bigger clubs. But, you know, the Socceroos have managed to grind out two fantastic results. I mean, Harry Suter has been immense. At centre-back. I think Matt Ryan obviously hasn't played a lot of club football coming in. He's been fantastic, and Aaron Moy's really sort of thrown back the years, back to his, you know, Premier League days with Huddersfield and Brighton, and he's been sensational there. So there's just been, you know, players lifting, you know, playing above themselves and collectively being able to get results, which, you know, is huge.
Yeah, absolutely massive, mate. I mean, tell you a guy that I'm really surprised is and the way he's played, and the fact that he's actually still available, because I was sure that he would have picked up at least two bookings in the group stages, though, is Jackson Irvine. He does a lot of dirty work for you guys.
Yeah, he's been great, just pressing in midfield, winning balls, you know, a very physical presence. And I think him and Moy have really worked well in tandem in central midfield. And I think, you know, there's a number of players, obviously, Matthew Lecky, great, you know, taking goal today, and obviously Goodwin, you know, against France was beautiful, and Mitchell Dukes had, I mean, he's probably not known for that kind of headed goal, but you know, there's just been, you know, players who've really created some magnificent moments.
Yeah, Parramatta Power's favourite son, Mitchell Duke. Can't write them off, mate. Can't write them off. Well, let's have a look then at the rest of the World Cup. Of course, on the other side of things, today we saw Argentina, who the Aussies will play next, get through their best performance, I think, so far, 2-0 against Poland. That was pretty clinical, wasn't it? They completely dominated the Poles.
Yeah, they did. I mean, considering Poland had everything to play for as well, it was disappointing for them. I think a bit of a dodgy penalty call, well, penalty won by Messi in that first half. But apart from that, it was domination from Argentina, and they've bounced back after that, you know, that really shock loss to Saudi Arabia in their opener.
What do you think Graham Arnold will be looking at, given you've got the Argies next? I mean, you know, the Aussies play Saudi Arabia a fair bit in and around, you know, Asian qualifying, Asian Cup, things like that. So, you know, they're a team that you'll know reasonably well. Anything you think he can take from that opening game to use in this round of 16 game?
Yeah, I think it's more of the same in terms of the approach. I don't think he's going to make a lot of changes. He's stuck mostly with the same 11, apart from right back, where, you know, it's been Atkinson and Karacic, and then Milos Deganek today. So I think he'll keep the same formation, the same players, you know, injury permitting, and, you know, look to be quite compact, but press when needed against Argentina, and obviously, you know, I guess kind of frustrate them. They've got world class ability everywhere, and, you know, I think the French game showed what a high powered opponent can do, but the self belief is definitely there. They're really riding a wave of momentum at the moment.
Yeah, they are. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. What have you made of the Poms so far, mate? I thought, you know, they dominated the second half against the Welsh, but were pretty poor, really, against both the US and in that first half against the Welsh.
Yeah, I think they've looked good. I mean, I think the USA have always been historically a tough opponent for them. You know, they've got a pretty bad record against America. And at the end of the day, they've They've won two and drawn one and topped their group. So I think they've done what they needed to do. They are, I think, you know, they're primed for a good World Cup and, you know, I think, you know, top four semi-final spot. But I think if the way it works out, if they beat Senegal, they're most likely to face France in the quarterfinal. And that is a huge challenge. I mean, I think, you know, France will be very, very dangerous and very tough to beat, obviously, the defending champions. So if they can get past France, then they are really in a good chance of winning the World Cup. But, yeah, I think after the first game, particularly in the UK, there was a lot of celebrations. And then after the USA game, a lot more sort of coming back down to earth, probably appropriately.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Of course, you mentioned the French. They had a win. Had a loss this morning, but they changed their entire 11, which I didn't actually see coming. I thought they'd just want to keep the momentum up, but he's pretty much given everybody in the squad a run now.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a short turnaround with this World Cup. It is a bit condensed, obviously. We're playing at the wrong time, so I think there was 9 changes, and then he brought Mbappe on for the last 30 minutes. So it was, you know, an interesting strategy. I guess, you know, just looking ahead to further in a tournament, and we'll see how that plays out, whether it works or not. It remains to be seen.
Yeah, we'll have to see, mate. We'll have to keep an eye on that. What have you made of the Dutch? They have been some people's dark horses. They have won that group. Of course, they play the US next. They haven't had Memphis Depay for the first 2 games. He's been recovering from a hamstring injury. I think he makes a big difference in that team. Do you rate them as an opportunity, as a chance to go deep?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, they don't seem to have perhaps some, you know, standout players like they have in the past, you know, with your Cruyffs and your Bergkamps, etc. But they do have a very, very talented squad, and they've shown, you know, a lot of class. I think without completely obliterating anyone, they've easily topped their group. So I think they can do some damage at this World Cup. They're always a team that knows how to get to the latter stages, you know, and they're still searching for that World Cup full win, which would obviously be massive for their country.
Yeah, it'd be absolutely huge. What we have we're halfway through the third round now, but we've still got a lot to be decided at this World Cup. Coming up tomorrow, probably the big game is Croatia-Belgium. Belgium, you know, that golden generation are looking pretty haggard. Lots of infighting in camp by the sounds of things, and this Croatian team just keeps ticking over. It's hard to see Belgium getting a win here the way things have been going.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little surprising how poor they were in their last game. Obviously, you know, Croatia finalists in 2018. But the one thing about this World Cup, and obviously we saw it a couple of hours ago, there just seems to be a lot of upsets, a lot of unexpected results. You're never really sure how a game's going to pan out. Obviously, you know, with Saudi Arabia winning and, you know, Japan winning as well. So, yeah, it's... I really can't call it. I mean, you probably think Croatia should have the edge, but there's still plenty of talent in that Belgian team if they can, you know, put their differences aside and get back to playing together.
Yeah, no Lukaku so far this tournament, so I don't know if they're going to risk him in that game, but it might be all or nothing there. Morocco should have too much for Canada, though, in the other Group F game, and they should cement themselves a playoff spot, around a 16 spot, I should say.
Yeah, again, I would imagine so. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Canada somehow pulled out a shock, but you know, I think Morocco are much stronger opponents, and they were fairly disappointing against Croatia. I think the Croatians were not short of motivation after some of the Canadian comments as well.
And then the Group E games kick off at 8 o'clock New Zealand time tomorrow. Costa Rica, Germany, you'd think the Germans would win that. And then Japan, Spain. If Germany beat Costa Rica, then a draw Japan, Spain is good enough for both of them. That's what I'm backing at the TAB. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, you would think, you know, Germany would be massive favourites. Costa Rica, very defensive team. And against Spain, I mean, they were outstanding in their first game. You think they'd have too much for Japan, but I think Japan are, you know, no walkover. They've got quality as well, and you know, they'll be riding high after their first result against Germany. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to keep an eye on that one, mate. I'm looking forward to it. And then finally, Brazil, still favourites for you, even without Neymar?
Yeah, I think they're looking decent. I mean, their last game, it took them quite a while to sort of break their opponents down and get the winner. But they're just sort of maybe a bit more pragmatic than some of the Brazilian teams at the past. But, you know, so much quality. They look quite united. They look pretty focused. They've definitely got to be one of the favourites to go all the way.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on those games on Saturday morning. John, I know that we've been talking football, and I know you cover football, but you also cover the Super League in depth in the UK as well. Big rumours on the internet the last couple of days that Owen Farrell is going to go and sign for Wigan. I saw Skybet started refusing to take bets on this, which is the one thing that made me go, maybe there is something to this. What have you heard, and how likely do you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I've not heard anything specific apart from the rumours. There's not sort of been official denials. It does, on the one hand, it does seem fairly far-fetched in that, you know, he earns so much more in rugby union. He's been a mainstay of that national team. There's a World Cup next year. I mean, I think the only really idea in terms of a move would be if his name sort of, you know, Penn's been put through his name by Eddie Jones and in terms of the England national team. But on the other flip side of that, you know, he's a Wiganer. His, you know, father is a club legend. I remember a few years ago spotting him in the crowd at Old Trafford at a Super League Grand Final when Wigan was playing. So I think he keeps a very close eye on Wigan and on Super League. And, you know, I think with the legacy of his name, you know, he probably would like to finish his career in league. So, you know, I think it's possible. I think it's unlikely. But, you know, if John Bateman does go back to the NRL as expected, that obviously opens up a marquee spot and, you know, a very, very healthy chunk of the salary cap that could entice him over. And, you know, it'd be great for rugby league in England, you know, and Super League to have a big name, a marquee sort of cross-code signing. We haven't seen a sizable one of those for quite a while.
No, we haven't. I mean, that would be huge. That would be a huge statement. And, yeah, I mean, I guess there's still the question of whether or not Eddie Jones is going to be in charge of that team come the World Cup, the way his November's gone.
Yeah, it's been a really odd autumn test in terms of Wales, how badly they've struggled. England have struggled badly. Obviously, the Wallabies have as well. So it's just whether, you know, the administrations decide to swing the axe, you know, a year out from a World Cup, or they stick strong. But yeah, Eddie Jones is obviously under huge pressure, as is Wayne Pivock at Wales.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, lots of pressure on those guys. Lots of jobs up in the air, you got to think. John, thanks very much for coming on, mate. Always good to chat. Go well. Enjoy the rest of the World Cup, and we might even chat around that round of 16 game, eh?
Thanks, mate. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, sounds good. John Davidson there with us out of the UK. You can follow him on Twitter, Johnny Davidson, for all your football and rugby league news from an Australian perspective based out of the UK. It is 11:22 here on SENZ. This is Mornings with Ian Smith.